Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House of the Rising Sun with Lynn Johnson and Bruce Rawls. And Bruce, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Lynn and all. I'm good. And I assume everyone else is in the same boat.
Yeah, in that boat. Yeah,
because we're all in the sameness curriculum, right?
Exactly, exactly. And my son came over to visit with his friend and my grandson.
Nice.
So, of course, they stayed up really late. So, and he's staying at downtown at a hotel. So, you know, I stayed up a little too late last night too, but I didn't have any trouble getting up. So I'm always excited and happy to wake up. And it's interesting. My husband told me, because I told him, you know, I don't really have dreams anymore. Wait a minute. I did pick up the mic. So people are not hearing us.
Oh.
There we go. That's right. There we go. Can you guys hear us now? just forgot to pick up the mic. That's all. you know, I told my husband, I don't really have dreams anymore. And he said, well, yeah. He said, because your waking life during the day is so much more interesting to you than sleeping, that he said, because he sleeps with me, he knows I don't sleep, and he knows that I am awake throughout most of the night, and he says, you know, sleep just doesn't interest you anymore. And although it does, believe me, when I'm ready to go to sleep, I'm ready to go to sleep, but I just don't dream, and that's really, really weird to me. In that way, I don't have any dreams that I want to stay there. And, you know how you get these dreams and you're just laying there going, oh, please, I don't want to wake up. I just want to keep dreaming this dream. I don't have that at all anymore. And I'm grateful for that. You know, the desire not to dream at all is, I think, pretty healthy.
Well, if we could look at that as a symbol of the attachment aversion, like an Eastern mysticism of thinking that something is better or worse than something else in the dream, and whether it's a waking dream or a nighttime dream, that could be a good symbol, huh? Or a helpful symbol anyway. To think, which is basically generalizing to all illusions are the same, and then we recognize that the real peace and the real joy comes from seeing the sameness equating what is the illusion and not relegating that to our identity, and then what's left over is our real identity. We get the identification with the dream out of the way. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, that's as much as, you know, people talk about wanting to awaken. You know, that's all you hear. Well, I don't know, maybe I'm in different circles, but in my circles, that's all you hear is people, I want to awaken, I want to awaken, I want to awaken. But then on the same time, they're saying, you know, I love this dream, I'm dreaming, please don't wake me up. and that's, you know, that's a sad, you know, it's not sad, but it's just, it's something that you have to recognize. Is that, you know, even the daytime dream, as much as you might love it, and even not just love it because it's wonderful to you, love it because it's terrible to you. And the terrible things that you seem to be seeing and thinking about and talking about and sharing with people and listening to, those are all ego preservation strategies. Every single one of those things is made to hook you and to keep you trapped. And so even the things you think you hate about the world that you just, you know, you're a crusader for and you want to get rid of, and, you know, let's save the whales and let's, you know, kick out the EU or, you know, whatever it is that we think is our enemy. That's the way the ego keeps us engaged.
And yeah, it just seems like the more we notice the venom and the rage and the righteous wrath and the crusader ethic, that's usually any of those is a clue to that we're still invested in, you know, righting the wrongs of a non-existent situation.
And even if you say you're miserable about it and you cry about it and you carry on about, you know, how terrible you feel, really, you're just feeling awesome because, man, did I ever show them, or boy, do, you know, is it really evident that I'm just a caring and compassionate person, or, you know, it's all the ego just bolstering itself up with all this stuff that we think is so innocuous. It's just insane.
I was just going to get that's when we need to wire in the specialness alert triggers, so that when those feelings of superiority or inferiority, you know, whether it's a victim or victimizer, it doesn't matter, or anything that reinforces the we-they paradigm, that's basically a clue that we're climbing the wrong ladder again, and it's going to get ricketier and more decrepit and more hazardous the farther up we think we're going. And ego has countless ladders, but there's only one ladder right in the middle. That's seemingly in the dark within the dream. That's only because we have chosen not to shine a light on it. But once we start climbing above the battleground, we see that all the other ladders are you know, essentially, they get dimmer and darker and more non-existent, and then the real ladder in the center is brighter and brighter, and that's the ladder of forgiveness, where we, you know, let go of all the crazy ideas that ego's propaganda promotes, that suggests that there's something else in the world that's going to do it for us, and you know, some form of specialness, some form of idolatry of the individual, or, you know, putting guilt in some form, you know, sin, guilt, fear, that whole paradigm on some pedestal, and usually with some specific in mind.
Always with something specific in mind, because the ego thrives on specifics. That's like, you know, that it's not the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, exactly.
but so many people, you know, will say, well, I have guidance. You know, the Holy Spirit is telling me to, you know, go out and campaign for Bernie, or, you know, is he still running? I don't know. In fact, I don't even look at that stuff anymore, because I realized how easy it is to just get caught up into it, and just, you know, you think you're being good and you think you're standing up for something that you think is good and right. But remember this. Jesus tells us over and over and over, you don't know a thing. You don't know the difference between good and bad. You don't know the difference between up and down.
And that ties in perfectly to the frequently asked question that I think would be very appropriate. Yeah.
Now, let me post that in the room. I got your text, so
yeah.
Let me post that in the room so people can go and look. And it's from the frequently asked questions, number 1162.
Yes.
And are you just going through these one at a time? Is that how you're?
I am. And actually, I skipped over a couple. I have to go back and read a few in between. And I've taken a short break while doing other things here in Colorado for another few days. But I'll get back to reading. I try to read two or three a day, and that way I can get through them in a short number of years. I guess I've got a
short number of years.
A couple hundred left to go, because I was 1,300 something of them, I think. But I've been taking a couple, you know, two or three years to go through them, and they're just brilliant. Because, you know, a few years ago I realized, well, gee, I haven't found any that aren't good. So I thought, well, I'll just go through them sequentially, and so I started doing that, and it's like, wow.
I love a man with a method there.
Well, that way I'm at least familiar with them, and that way I can say, oh, I think there's an FAQ, and then I can search for it and.
Well, it's all, see, none of it is really, I mean, all of it is for, what is it, our salvation, the awakening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could be doing this and saying, look how smart I am. I know all these things. There's an FAQ, like Dove does, with I'm not saying anything about this because this is brilliant to me, like Dove just spouts out, you know, where it is in the course, paragraph, chapter, number. You know, you're, you know, it, I mean,
That's a really nice gift to have that sort of encyclopedic mind to remember those references, and that is a gift, and Dev uses it as a gift, and which is great. I always have to use the search function for almost all of them. But I think the familiarity is really helpful, because regardless of our fluency with memorization techniques, the fact that we have access to this wonderful body of material, you know, on in the course itself, of course.
Of course.
Actually, I was thinking of making a spoof lyrics for the Mr. Ed song, but
yeah, I was too.
Maybe we'll have to cut that together.
Same thing, of course. So
anyway, but yeah, there's just the FACIM.org site and the ACIM.org site under renovation.
Oh, right.
Both those sites and so many of the places have lots of stuff online that we can tune into. And this FAQ from the folks, just so right on stuff. Yeah, you started to say, by the way, so
yeah. So Bruce and I are just back from the Weekend of Freedom retreat.
Yes.
Estes Park, Colorado. And Bruce was one of the speakers, and I've talked about it, that you know how much I enjoyed your talk, and just your presence there was lovely. It was so good to have you.
I had so much fun.
Gosh. Wasn't it? It just was amazing to me. The spirit, I mean, really of all the conferences and workshops that I have been to, the spirit of this was just so strong, so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say is I was really impressed with David Hoffmeister getting up and talking about the foundation, and that they are having an actual fundraiser for the foundation at their place, the monastery in Utah, next year in July, I think it is.
I believe it's July, yes. Uh-huh.
So this is, you know, that he has a pretty large organization, David does. And he's really pushing for, you know, people to support and keep the Foundation for Inner Peace up and running, which just really just impressed me. You know, I mean, because I go to these, I went to the Course in Miracles conference in New York, and the guy who ran that got up and said he thought Helen and Bill and Ken and Judy were all liars, and that they hid the truth from us because they didn't publish every note that Helen ever wrote, and they didn't go through her underwear drawer trying to find little snippets of things so they could publish, so that we could know every word that Jesus ever said to Helen. You know, that you can tell I probably have an attitude about that, but the just the difference,
maybe a little
the difference between the attitude was just beyond, it was just joyful. It was just joyful to hear, you know, someone like that really focusing on let us support this thing that is so valuable to us in our community.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just had to say that. So.
Well, thank you. And just real quick, since you mentioned the next Weekend of Freedom retreat, which is basically a fundraiser for the Foundation for Inner Peace that will be held in Utah at the David Hoffmeister's organization's monastery there. That I already have it on my calendar. It's the 14th through the 16th of July, not this year, but next year, the 2017. And yeah, I'm looking forward to being there. I think that'll be a lot of fun. And and in support of the Foundation for Inner Peace, which is doing such great work and has since the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what got this whole thing going. I mean, I could talk a lot more about that.
Yeah. But the translation program, just to have a program, even if some of the translation might be a little bit flawed, as we found out from Igor, who is Igor is here. About the words, what was it that actually means? I can't remember. Maybe Igor. Hey, Igor's waving at us. anyway, some of the words don't translate as they do in English.
Sure, of course.
But you know, those things will happen, and then we have people like Igor who can point it out to us because they understand. He understands the metaphysics of the Course.
Right.
And that's the most important thing, you know. And that's why Ken always emphasized so much in his talks. You know, you have to understand the metaphysics of this Course, mm-hmm. or none of this makes any sense at all. And so, you know, that if the metaphysics doesn't gets translated well, I think that really makes all the difference. It shifts everything. So, anyway.
As you're saying that, I was thinking, I think I could summarize two of the most important concepts to always keep uppermost. I used to say it's all about the mind, but I'm realizing that more and more it's all about my mind. Because if I think of it's about anyone else's mind, then I'm missing the point of the Course. If I'm thinking it's about anything other than mind, I'm missing the point of the Course. Because it's never about behavior, it's never about form, it's never about anything other than the content of the mind. And because everything that I see as a seeming individual seem to experience is a projection, then it's really it's the classroom of the curriculum of Course in Miracles is the projected world that I have made on some unconscious level that is being presented to me in a silver platter with absolute mathematical perfection, moment to moment. I get the perfect curriculum handed to me in the form of all the people and places and things that populate my space-time dream world that I call life, gives me a way to access the unconscious guilt and bring it back inside, shine a light on it with our inner kindness teacher that we all share, and forgive it and watch it dissolve and see the real love behind it appear after I've relinquished my identification and attachment to the special love and special hate that's usually in the way. So.
Oh, and that's a great process. that is the only process really that you have to actually. This is my own opinion. I don't know if this is true. It might be completely different for someone else, and I'm, you know, I shouldn't be so absolute about it. But you're right, in my opinion. You have to recognize the source, and recognize the guilt that source represents,
mm-hmm.
and let go of that guilt. And this is what people, I think, over and over and over, and I did too for years, neglected to look at my guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm told to do it over and over.
and the ego, you know, counsels that we should be afraid of that, just like, you know, the fearsome figure on the screen in the hall of the Great Hall of Oz, you know, keeps the Dorothy and her comrades, you know, trembling. And Toto, you know, is that part of us metaphorically that says, well, let's pull back this curtain and just see what's there. And it's like, wait a minute. This horrific guilt that ego doesn't want me to look at is nothing. It's just this little frayed, adult child posing as a wizard. that really, you know, it's just silly, and I think that's why that was such a, I thought a useful for me, and I, everyone seemed to enjoy the presentation I gave a week ago in Estes Park about, you know, the silliness of it.
And in fact,
you read the FAQ,
I was going to ask you if you could send me that presentation.
I will. I think I'm going to post it.
All those quotes are gorgeous. Oh, you got it posted on your.
Well, I'm going to. I've been a bit busy, but I will post it on ACI blog and let everybody go through it.
Oh yeah, because I thought it was brilliant, and I really, you know, and unless you can look at the ego and see the silliness, and join with Jesus in looking at it. That's the thing that people don't remember too, is that you're joining with Jesus when you're doing this. You're not just, or your inner kindness teacher, or your inner teacher, or the Holy Spirit, or Buddha, or your dead Aunt Marge, whoever it is that represents to you that your inner teacher, you know, what you really are. You know, when you can join with that, then, I mean, really, that's, in fact, that's the purpose of the course, is to reconnect us with our own inner teacher.
Yeah, yeah. Once we've got that solid connection, there's really nothing, you know, we need to be concerned about, because that connection, that re-identification with the self we never left, the capitalist self that we all share, actually, gives us the peace and the courage to address any seeming horrific obstacle or hurdle, and just see it as just, it's just silly. It's just silly to make big deals out of stuff.
Exactly, exactly. All right, so yeah, so let's go on. And oh, I was going to ask Igor, my friend David and his partner, who is Russian, are in Russia, and he says that the sun is up like 22 hours of the day.
Yeah.
And I bet it's Igor's in Siberia. I bet it's that way too in Siberia.
Uh-huh.
So you're awake all day and all night here. As I'm wondering what time it is in Siberia. And I just realized, oh, it's still daylight there probably.
Yeah, above the Arctic Circle, it's, 24/7 sunlight this time of year.
And pretty close to it.
Yeah.
All right, so let me go on and read. This is real quick, the question. So I'll read. You want me to read, or you want
sure,
to?
Sure, go for
okay.
it. Go for
okay,
it.
The question is about humor. Maybe he's in St. I'm not sure where he's at. I'll have to look, Igor. I'll let you know. So what is the meaning of humor? Does it have anything to do with joy? Or is it just part of the illusion? So that's an interesting question, first off, thinking about it. You know, what is it? And I have my thoughts about humor, so I'm going to see if Jesus or Ken or whoever wrote this has the same thought. Humor is just part of the illusion. And as part of the illusion, it can be a complex topic, one that has been analyzed and studied extensively over the years to determine what makes something funny or humorous. Freud, in one of the earlier analyses of humor, theorized that it always involves tension reduction or release. From the perspective of A Course in Miracles, guilt is the sole source of tension, and so things which release or reduce guilt may be experienced as funny or humorous. But in the end, as with all things of the world, humor's meaning depends on whether it serves a right-minded or a wrong-minded purpose. So that's just like everything, yes. You know, it depends on how you use it. And I'm sure they're going to go on and explain, because I didn't read ahead, that you can use it to hurt people and you can use it to hurt yourself. And in fact, in my humble opinion, or honest opinion, whichever that may be, and don't ask me on a game of Trivial Pursuit, because I'll always give you the wrong answer. IMHO. humor, my thought about humor I got from Robert Heinlein from Stranger in a Strange Land, because the main character, Valentine Michael Smith, is a human who was raised by Martians who had a completely different thought system. And so he's a human who doesn't have the thought system of humans that is the ego thought system. He's been raised with a different kind of thought system. And so he doesn't know what humor is. There's no need for humor where he came from, because there's no tension. There's no fear. And kind of makes you want to move to Mars. But when he doesn't see the point of humor until he goes to the zoo. And he goes to the zoo and he sees two monkeys in a cage. And I can't remember exactly what happens, but one of the monkeys does something outrageous to another of the monkeys. And he just people are laughing. And he just suddenly starts laughing, the first time he's ever laughed in his entire life. And he laughs, and then he laughs. And they said, "Why are you laughing? What is funny to you about this? And he said, I'm laughing because it is so sad, so tragic that you can't even cry about it. It's so beyond belief of in tragedy that you can't even cry about it. So you have to laugh. And I think that's what happened with the Tiny Mad Idea. Mm-hmm. If we had just said, oh my God, that's a horrible thought and laughed at it instead of saying, oh, maybe that could work. Then it would have been a different story for us all the way.
I'm going to have to go back and read the book because it's been about 4 decades since I picked it up. but that's a good point. Is you know, laughter really, again, there's two motivations, but you know, one of the more sane approaches would be to recognize that you know, it is so pathetic. You know, the ego's interpretation of things is so pathetic that you know, you could either cry or laugh, and either would in a sense be appropriate, but you know, in some cases, laughter, you know, just provides a comic relief to give us, to remind us, to help remind us, or maybe it's an expression of when we choose to remind ourselves that it's just silly. It's just totally inconsequential, the identity that we've so adapted and cherished, that it's just crazy for us to be so invested in it. And what can we do but laugh and essentially, you know, shrug our shoulders and you know, sometimes physically laugh, but sometimes just
inwardly. Shake our heads. Oh yeah, my yeah. God, what are we doing?
Exactly.
and then you can laugh.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if our minds were healed, we would laugh at everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
We would just be laughing at everything, even the worst tragedies. We would know, and then nothing happened. You know, what's the deal? You know, don't worry. You know, it just, I always, to me, Bruce, my watchword always, and ever since I heard Jacob Glass say something about this during one of his talks, and it just hit me. The very first miracle principle is it. If you could only just get this.
Yeah, yeah.
That there is no order of difficulty in miracles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nothing is greater or worse. Nothing is harder or better. There's no, it's all the same.
Illusion A equals illusion B equals illusion C ad infinitum. And boy, we sure don't want to, you know, adopt that idea as egos, because that basically, you know, triggers the game over circuit. And
yeah.
And the game over is like, wait a minute. That fake identity that I'm so invested in is bogus, you know.
It's bogus.
But you know, we've convinced ourselves as egos that's where our solace comes from. And yet, if we really honestly assess things, it's like, wait a minute, we've never really been truly happy. You know, we may have had some momentary glee at someone else's expense or at our own expense, if it's, you know, martyrdom or whatever, or self-pity, but the real laughter, again, it's what's it for? And I think these next two paragraphs go into that and help us.
Well, why don't you just read those next two paragraphs, Bruce?
Well, I will then.
Well, thank you.
Okay, and we're reading, just for people who might have joined in just a moment ago, we're reading from FAQ number 1162 in the Frequently Asked Questions that you can find at facimoutreach.org, which is part of the Foundation for A Course in Miracles online resources. And the question is, what is the meaning of humor? Does it have anything to do with joy, or is it just part of the illusion? And Lynn read the first paragraph. I'll read the second here. In the service of the ego, humor is a vehicle for attack, as can be easily seen in mean-spirited attempts to get a laugh by putting others down, where an individual or group is targeted as the butt of the joke, such as ethnic and racist jokes, political jokes, and humor that plays upon the battle of the sexes. And I'll just pause for a moment to interject an exercise that I try to remember to do whenever I watch some of my favorite shows, which a couple of them on Comedy Central, The Daily and Nightly Show, and Stephen Colbert's Late Show now, and after his long run of on the Comedy Central, and then folks like Bill Maher and there's just a lot of really good humor nowadays that if you're not careful, you can find yourself identifying with a we-they thinking instead of seeing that we're all silly, not in any kind of mean-spirited or divisive way, but we're all silly to identify with wanting to fix the dream at the expense of anyone else. And it's just crazy, isn't it?
It is just crazy. And if you don't get that, if you study A Course in Miracles and you don't get that, then you're going to be, I know a lot of course students who are being vehemently political and arguing about, and I did it myself, probably 10 years studying the course every day and doing the lessons. I still was, tearing my hair out over elections and crying over things that happened in the world because I didn't get it. And not saying that I get it now, but I get something that says to me, wow, this no order of difficulty and miracles is the actual truth of this situation. So, why are you getting, upset about one thing or another or happy about one thing or another? There's no difference. So anyway, I'll let you continue to read.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. I'll start that sentence over again. In the service of the ego, humor is a vehicle for attack, as can be easily seen in mean-spirited attempts to get a laugh by putting others down, or an individual or group is targeted as the butt of a joke, such as ethnic and racist jokes, political jokes, and humor that plays upon the battle of the sexes, in quotes. Ego humor can be cruel and vicious, always coming at the expense of someone seen as outside of oneself or one self-identified group, and so always reinforcing the perception of separation and differences. The unconscious motivation behind the ego's use of humor would always be to see guilt outside of oneself. There's the pivotal idea, isn't it? Expanding on Freud's thesis, the tension reduction in the ego's humor would only be a reduction in experienced guilt as it is projected onto another. And the relief from such amusement would only be temporary, since the underlying guilt has not really been addressed and released. So there's the pivotal difference between genuine inclusive laughter that's gentle and the mean-spirited stuff that basically is intended to maintain the belief in separation. And it's always about some specific that is seen as different. And I even posted this morning in response to a Facebook friend's post about Brexit. And couldn't help but remember that one of my favorite skits of all time is Monty Python's Life of Brian, where the People's Front of Judea in this movie are sitting up in the bleachers of the Colosseum, watching some horrific spectacle which you don't see on screen, but they're talking about in very hostile terms the Judean People's Front, and then and then they point to someone who's in one of these other organizations, this only just rearranged the order of the words, right? And that's the only difference, but they presumably have the same goal, but they all holler out at the end of this little clip, splitter, because that person is sitting 10 yards away or whatever in the bleachers. But that's the silliness. We all have these factions and differences and that are all made up, no matter what the difference seems to be. It's just silly. It's just crazy.
It is silly and crazy. And that whole Brexit thing, people are, I think maybe it's caused some trouble in the stock market. I don't know. But there's a lot of, excitement around the world apparently because of this. I have friends in Britain, and they're saying, people are saying they voted for it even though they didn't want it, and because they didn't think it would win. which is bizarre. This is what's going to happen with Donald Trump, too. We're going to end up with, you know, Brexit and President Trump. And then if you don't see something to laugh about, then, you know, something even more absurd is going to happen. I mean, it's just going to keep being piling on the absurdities until you get to the point, we get to the point where we just say, wait a minute, how can this be? And, you know, just stop believing it. But I think it's going to get far more bizarre as we go deeper into denial. I don't know. Anyway,
more bizarre than now? How could that be possible, Ed?
There's no order.
It already seems pretty surreal to me, but I'll use everything that happens as my forgiveness classroom. I'm realizing the wisdom in that. So.
It is perfect.
Do you want to read the third paragraph?
Sure. Okay. So, right-minded use of humor, in contrast, either minimizes or makes light of differences. And then, although its form may at times appear to be similar to the ego's, its content is gentle, and its purpose is to help us not to take ourselves quite so seriously. Rather than laughing derisively at others, we learn to smile at ourselves. Drawing again on Freud's tension reduction release hypothesis, it could be said that right-minded humor involves an actual release from guilt, as our investment in separation is relinquished in that moment of transcending the ego's artificial barriers and divisions. The laughter that may accompany this humor is light and joyful. And I'm trying to think of an example of how, you know, basically it's laughing at ourselves and our own...
gently.
Yeah, gently laughing at ourselves and
very,
our...
Very, very gently.
Faux pas. And in actuality, even if you think, if you look at a brother and you think, oh man, you know, Donald Trump, what an insane guy. He, you know, he is a laughingstock. America is, you know, if you were to look at that, those thoughts, okay, those thoughts are the things that you laugh at. Not the Donald Trump and how stupid America is. And if you're voting for him, you must be a moron. Those are not that's not the kind of laughter Jesus is talking about. He's talking about the kind of laughter where I look at those thoughts where I think I'm going to call my brother a moron and I'm going to, you know, condemn him or wish that he would have a stroke or fall off his bicycle or something. whatever those wishes that come into my mind about my brother, when I look at them, if I could just laugh at the insanity of that thought and the insanity of the wish to do a thing like that or to think a thing like that, that is where, you know, Jesus is talking about laughter, you know, to look at that and say, my God, you know, that would just, you know, I can't even imagine how I could have thought a thought like that. But yeah, and when I can do that, then I can laugh. But if I'm still looking outward, and like, you know, Michael Valentine Smith and that monkey, looking and seeing, this is tragic. This is so sad. I'm so angry. I'm so upset, or whatever those thoughts are. Release, look at that and recognize that it comes from my sense of guilt, mainly because I feel like I'm responsible, and I am, for everything that happens. I know that I'm responsible for everything that happens in my world, and therefore I should be able to control that, and monkeys shouldn't do bad things to each other, and Donald Trump shouldn't be our president, and the EU should still be, Britain should be part of the EU. Those are insane thoughts.
Mm-hmm. You mean like flinging excrement at each other isn't sane?
Yes, like flinging excrement at each other.
Figuratively or literally?
Yeah. Yeah. So if I'm really mad and I really believe it and I'm so upset, I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to recognize, the reason that I'm doing it. I'm going to blame you for it. And, therefore it's your fault that I'm doing terrible things to you.
Again, and we take that assessment seriously. We take a maladaptive interpretation, you know, seriously. And it's just, what was I thinking?
Joan says,
when you said faux, what's that?
Joan says, fling toilet paper.
Yeah, right, there you go. A moment ago, you said a couple of words that it actually reminded me of a funny pun and, you know, double entendre, and that is faux pas. And if you think about F-O-E-P-A, that's what we've all done, is made a fearful God, you know, a father figure that's an enemy out of the all-encompassing oneness that we never left. And we think we killed God. We think we threw God under the bus, metaphorically. And so now we have a faux pas instead of a friend pas. And it's all silly. Isn't it silly?
Oh, that is cute. I got to write that on the board.
Thank you for saying those two words, Lynn, because that's, you know, but the friend paw is, you know, the metaphoric parent that we never left, you know, that just smiles gently, you know, and gives no credence and no acknowledgement to the dream, because it knows that if, you know, if that perfect oneness were to invest in the dream, then it wouldn't be perfect oneness anymore, because the dream is all about duality and differences. And why would anyone in their right mind go there? But we all seem to have gone there. But that's only our dreaming mind that thinks that it's here.
Yeah.
Shall I read the next paragraph?
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah.
Jesus displays such a right-minded sense of humor throughout the course, as in The Hero of the Dream, favorite section, chapter 27, section 8, where he describes our so-called life. Oh, that's such a great... So-called and seeming, I think, are wonderful adjectives that help us remember that to not take the dream so seriously, because, you know, we maybe, you know, are able, we can remember to back up and look at it with a little bit of, you know, questioning like, is this real? Where he describes our so-called life in the body, pointing out our silly beliefs, which we take so seriously. For example, few topics are more serious and guilt-inducing to most of us. Yet Jesus refers to money as simply as, quote, little metal discs or paper strips the world proclaims as valuable and real. And that's from paragraph 2, sentence 2 in section 8 of chapter 27 in the text. And he regards the ego thought system and its ramifications simply as a tiny mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. And a, quote, a joke, unquote, further on in paragraph 6 of the same section. His words are not meant to attack our beliefs, but only to suggest a more lighthearted perspective that will allow us to move towards acknowledging and then looking beyond our guilt, thereby releasing it, rather than attempting to place it outside ourselves, as our egos would have us do, whereas reality is never questioned. And I just flashed on this while I was reading that last sentence, is that maybe, you know, what we're really doing, if we're undoing our investment in a fraudulent thought system, and we made up all the specifics of differences, then wouldn't it make sense that if each of us, seemingly as separate and different individuals, having contributed partially to the apartness or partiness, a good adjective to make up during election year, maybe. Maybe the way we undo it is by looking at all the specific things that we made as they come up, give some kind of tip of the hat to saying, okay, Holy Spirit, you now are helping me look at all the specifics I made up on my way deeper into the dream, and use those exact same specifics on my way out as I'm, you know, got the backup beeper on, you know, meet, 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 and backing out of this massive labyrinthine cave of darkness that ego wants to keep us in, you know, with humor, we can see that each one of those specifics becomes a way out of the dream, and we get our own custom-tailored backup route that leads us to the mouth of the cave where, you know, we get a slow trajectory, so we're not blinded suddenly by the light. We get a little gradual awakening as it gets lighter and lighter as we get toward the opening of the cavern of the mind that we think we crept down into of the cave of separation and the labyrinth of duality.
Very, very descriptive. That was a very descriptive.
Well, just kind of the
let's see.
The metaphor that came to mind.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's very good. Igor writes in the room, Jesus even has some black humor in A Course in Miracles. Text 4, section 3, do not make the pathetic error of clinging to the old rugged cross. The only message of the crucifixion is that you can overcome the cross. And until then, you are free to crucify yourself as often as you choose.
Yeah, and we do, don't we? I mean, every little twinge of guilt or suffering or victimhood or martyrdom or smugness or arrogance or anything that's the least bit uncomfortable, that's a crucifixion. I mean, you know, again, if there's no order or difficulty,
absolutely.
It's everything that where we're not feeling perfect peace is we're crucifying ourselves, and this need not be as our beloved text says.
Well, and also, you know, when Jesus says to us, even the slightest twinge slightest twinge of anger is like some kind of like. I can't remember the actual words, but
I think it's like a veil drawn over intense fury.
A veil drawn over intense fury. So even the slightest little bit of, oh, darn, or, shucks, or, you know, I wish I would have, you know, done this, or, you know, you should have stopped there, or, you know, whatever, any little bit of, just a little twinge of upset is, a fury.
Somehow the
fury. Intense. Yeah.
It is. Somehow when we said darn and shucks, I was thinking that could have been the inflammatory words of the early Batman TV series, you know, when there was bam and kapow and double darn and ultra shucks.
Yeah, but even those tiny little things, even just the tiniest little thing is intense fury. And we don't even recognize it. But for me, this has been something I've really been looking at. I'm going to be like Brene Brown going around. You know, I don't know if you know Brene Brown, but she's not a course teacher. She's a psychiatrist or psychologist, and she studies guilt and shame. And whenever she goes places and people say, what are you going to talk about? And she says, shame. They get, what? I don't want to hear about shame or guilt or embarrassment or, you know, whatever, unworthiness. She does studies of this. I think I'm going to get to be like the Brene Brown of the course community, because really all I ever want to talk to you about is guilt, because I recognize for myself that I was in such denial about my belief in guilt for so many years that, 99.9% of what I read in the course just went straight over my head. It did not affect me because, you know, as much as I love the beautiful words and the teachings and the practices and all those kind of things, if I wasn't looking at that hidden guilt, that intense fury that was under that veil, then I was doing nothing. Running in place. I had no forward momentum going on. When I finally got real that Jesus is very, very, very serious about guilt, and very, very serious that, you know, we have it and we're doing it, we're using it. And if you are actually looking in the mirror and seeing a face, there is guilt that you have not dealt with, because you cannot, seriously, you cannot accept any of Jesus' teachings here if you don't accept your own belief in guilt. Because, I mean, it's the basis of the entire illusion. In fact, he says it's the fabric of the illusion. The illusion is made from your guilt. It's a projection of my own guilt out into what I call the world. And so, you know, how seriously important it is, and I'm not going to get on my guilt. Darn it. I was not going to go on a big guilt trip here. But I don't feel guilty for saying it. So anyway, I'll go into the next paragraph. Because you can laugh at the guilt. You can, when you see it, you will laugh at it. When you hide it,
only from above the battleground, right?
Yes. When you hide it, you're afraid of it, and you'll run away from it, and it'll seem so much greater than it is. But when you see it's nothing, and you can let it go. And you know, lesson 93 is my again. You know, that's when I realized Jesus was really serious. Because he knew how I felt about myself, and he was very eager to tell me that's not true. And
but we have to look at the unworthiness. We have to look at the guilt. We have to look at the shame and the horrible. You know, like one of the Rupert Glissons also says, you know, you believe you're the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And at face value, you say, "What? No, not me." But then, if we have the least feeling of like, "Well, I don't deserve to be happy, no matter what," if there's anything that qualifies or makes conditional our peace, then there's a worthiness issue going on there. And you know, we don't have to look at it at someone else's rate or schedule, but on our own time and our own terms, you know, we'll all look at it, and we'll all come to see that those fears and those guilts and those sins and that you know, terror around, you know, the death of the ego, which never existed in the first place, they're all unfounded. They're initially all unconscious, but the more we bring them to consciousness through quantum forgiveness, through the three R's of revealing, releasing, and replacing, the more we realize that they're nothing. They're just nothing. But that's only after we drag them to the light of our inner kindness teacher's brilliantly lit altar in the mind and look cleanly and clearly and purely at the truth, which says no one can be indicted here. There's no crime that's been committed. Perfect oneness has continued unabated despite our dreams. And that's the salvation that we're all looking for.
Exactly. And then you will laugh.
Yeah.
We'll laugh in joy. So exactly. In your gentle laughter, it is healed. Yep. So let me read this next paragraph. Is this the last paragraph?
I think so. Humor and laughter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Very good. We might, we weren't going to be too far over. So. Yep. Humor and laughter have no purpose in heaven, for their right-minded function is corrective. That is, they serve to lighten and eventually cast off the burden of guilt that we have foolishly made real and taken upon ourselves, while we remain too afraid of the joy without contrast that is our real inheritance. As Jesus explains, this is the way salvation works. As you step back, the light in you steps forward and encompasses the world. It heralds not the end of sin in punishment and death. In lightness and in laughter is sin gone, because its quaint absurdity is seen. That's what I was just saying. It is a foolish thought, a silly dream, not frightening, ridiculous perhaps, but who would waste an instant in approach to God himself for such a senseless whim? What a question! Who would do this?
What was I thinking?
You know, I could have went. I could have had God, and I decided I wanted this instead. What?
I had a V8 instead of God.
I had a V8 instead of God. What was I thinking? Oh my gosh! And why would I waste an instant? on such a senseless whim. And that's from Workbook Lesson 156. And so the world will end in joy, because it is a place of sorrow. When joy has come, the purpose of the world has gone. The world will end in peace, because it is a place of war. When peace has come, what is the purpose of the world? The world will end in laughter, because it is a place of tears. Where there is laughter, who can longer weep? And only complete forgiveness brings all this to bless the world. In blessing, it departs, for it will not end as it began. Beautiful. That's from the Manual for Teachers. And I think that's from How Will the World End. An amazing, amazing, amazing concept. But it's so, so very, very helpful to just know that, you know, it's my choice. And I'm grateful for that. That is salvation. Let's see what Igor has written from chapter 31, section 4, paragraph 11. Forgive yourself your madness and forget all senseless journeys and all goalless aims. They have no meaning. You cannot escape from what you are.
Yes. Thank you, Igor, for that. Because that's one of my favorite sections, the real alternative in the last chapter of the text. Because it's so poignant and profound that it just points out that, you know, sure, if you want to try all the different things on your bucket list until you've exhausted every single permutation, it's like, go for it, but you're not going to find peace there. And eventually we, you know, start to generalize and realize, well, that is pretty silly, isn't it? But, you know, to not condemn ourselves when we, you know, think that we need to check one more thing off that list, and then we start to see, well, gee, you know, there's a pattern developing here. Every time I do one of those things, I'm still not as completely peaceful as I wanted to be. And then we can continue to go inward toward the contents of our mind and see that it's all there. That, you know, we can really look at the contents of our mind out pictured in the form of the seeming others in our world. And that's how to use the metaphor that Ken uses brilliantly in one of his talks, Ken Wapnick, you know, about the labyrinth of the mind, you know, how he, I think he talks about the Minotaur and Ariadne and the myth, how it's this golden thread. It's the same thread as the dark thread that the ego led us down into the darkness and the cavernous duality of the seeming world of space and time and individuality. But we can use that same thread by just turning our hands around and you know, hand over hand the other direction out of the cave, and it becomes a golden thread. It's a dark thread going deeper into duality and fragmentation and differences. But once we use the same thread for a different purpose, for the Holy Spirit's purpose, it becomes a golden thread that illuminates our way back to the oneness that we never left and the peace that we couldn't have possibly compromised.
So. That was a beautiful metaphor. I really like that.
Yeah.
The Ariadne in the cave.
I'll have to find that audio that Ken talks about that. But it's really great the way he describes it, too. And I'm just paraphrasing a bit. So.
That is cool. And also, when you, for some reason, we've talked about this bucket list thing. For some reason, when you said bucket list this time, I thought about the metaphor or the story of crabs in a bucket. Do you know that story?
Hmm.
That if you have a single crab in a bucket, he will climb out.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a bunch of crabs in a bucket, none of them will climb out. And why? Because if they as soon as they start to climb out, the others below them will grab them and pull them back.
Mm.
So.
Interesting. Yeah.
You'll have to look that up. I'm not sure if that's true. I've heard that story many times, but I'm not sure if it actually happens in reality. Huh. Maybe that's a Mythbuster thing, but
might be. And I think that show's ended, so we might have to make another show for that.
Oh, well, I don't know. I stopped watching Mythbusters again. You know, it just was one of those, you know, as entertaining as it was just entertainment. And it, you know, it just was satisfying idle curiosities about things that really have no meaning. You know, it's just crazy to me how we do this.
Yeah.
We just give so much meaning or even just have an idle curiosity to just, oh, let me find out about this. Really, it's just investing more time in the dream. And
When you said idle curiosity, I was thinking, well, you could spell it I-D-O-L or I-D-L-E, curiosity.
Yeah.
It works either way. And then it also occurred to me that, you know, the myth buster that really works and as the universal one is our inner kindness teacher, a.k.a. Holy Spirit or Jesus of the Course, that gives us the opportunity to see the myth that we've made, but to not condemn ourselves for it. And that's where the sense of humor comes in.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so just like you and I, I know it's you laugh a lot. I laugh a lot. But I don't laugh at tragedy. I don't laugh at things that other people laugh at in a lot of times, because it does not appear to me to be funny at all when bad things happen to people. You watch these videos like from America's Home Video, Funniest Home Videos and such, and, you know, people are falling down and smacking themselves and their pants are falling down and getting ripped and, you know, all these things that are, you know, not really funny in any way at all. And yet, I mean, as far as, you know, really it's an attack.
It is. It is. And it kind of reiterates what we just talked about through this whole FAQ, is that it's all about the purpose. What is it for? Is it to return our mind to a kind state where we include everyone in our definition of self? Or is it a divisive weapon used by the ego to maintain a belief in separation and,
well, and
cruelty?
To protect ourselves. We laugh at those things to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
We laugh at those things so that it doesn't happen to us. You know, we can look and see how bad that is, and it's not going to happen to me. I have a whole lot of stuff to say about humor, so don't get me started on that either. You know, it really is, these things that we take for granted as being, oh, it's just entertainment, you know, I'm just doing this for fun, or, you know, I'm just doing, you know, I'm... No, it's not. You know, sitting around, you know, I'm playing games like Grand Theft Auto or, you know, people say, well, this doesn't cause people to become, you know, personally violent, you know, if they're, you know, driving a car around, shooting people, running people over, you know, that doesn't put a thought of violence into their mind. And I don't understand how it can't, how it wouldn't. And how could you be entertained by anything that was, you know, based on such cruelty? And yet, that's my opinion, too. And I'm condemning it. So I should be laughing at it and saying, yeah, it's funny stuff. You know, I don't know.
It's all pretty silly, huh?
It is pretty silly. All right, sweetie. Well, I'm going to let you go and go on and do our morning meditation. Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls. I had so much fun with you.
Thanks, Johnson.
Last weekend.
It's always a joy, isn't it? Yeah, and it was great to sit side by side within the contents of our dream figure, or the heroes of the dream that we ascribe to the bodies we seem to hang out in. But it was a lot of fun in Estes Park and sharing with you and about 100 other people. So when you have, either today's or last week's audio together, I'll post that on ICIM blog and along with the photo, the selfie we took.
Okay, I didn't send you last week's.
I guess. Oh, that's okay. I've been so busy. I just remembered it now myself. So.
And that was a good one because, I mean, they're all good, but we were live and together. So
very cool. Cool microphone, even.
Yeah. With my giant, heavy microphone that I carry around with me.
Vintage. It seemed like a vintage mic to me.
I know. It seems like that. Isn't it cool? My kids got that for me for Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is how people support me, so I love it.
It's
all right. Okay, well, Bruce, I love you.
Likewise. Have a great week, all.
Yeah, and I'll talk to you next Saturday.
Happy Bye. Forgiveness, classroom.
Bye.
Thank you.